You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, Calvinator on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us at 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, or what used to be Twitter. He joins us every Thursday at this time. Former U.S. attorney, acting attorney, Jim Santel, host of Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings across the network, 9 to 11. Listen to it. It's fabulous. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Jane, Greg, it's always a delight to be with you once again. And today, for those folks who are tuning in by StreamYard, you can actually see real law books behind me there. How exciting is that?
You rented them just for this. That's so nice.
I did. It's all a set. It's
right.
It's real,
right.
But I'm not real anyway, so no. not a great compromise.
No, he is an actual attorney who does legal things.
And he's real, too.
And he is. Yes, he exists. We have a lot of things, very serious things to talk about this morning. And let's start with the situation in Chicago and ICE agents in Chicago and Bovino, the head of ICE. This ICE force in Chicago is in a little trouble, it looks like. Or is that not the case?
No, I think he's in a lot of trouble. Anytime that a federal judge asks to see you every single evening to report on what you've done during the course of the day, you're probably in more than a little bit of trouble. And so that's what she has requested recently. The Seventh Circuit, the appeals court just above her, just yesterday said, well, that's a bit excessive, and said he doesn't have to show up for all of those. But she is plainly monitoring very, very closely what is going on. He is a U.S. Border Patrol commander. Again, you got it just right. His name is Gregory Bovino. And he is also this fellow who is seen on video hurling a canister of tear gas into a crowd. When you interview him, he plainly is not someone who's there committed to safety and security, but rather to, my words, not his, get people. And that is a commission, that's a mission, that's a goal, completely contrary to what we anticipate from anybody involving the administration of justice and certainly trying to keep peace on the streets of Chicago or anywhere. This is again, a reflection of the Trump administration directive to do whatever you want to do. And that's why this is so incredibly troubling.
Absolutely. And one of the instances, and again, this Bovino got in trouble before because he was directed not to be lobbing tear gas into residential areas. And then after she issued that order, he was caught on video doing exactly that. And at the same time, there were kids leaving their houses with their parents to go take part in a Halloween parade as he lobbed tear gas into the neighborhood. And another story that we mentioned briefly, at the same event, there is a running club in Chicago who posted this on social media. One of our athletes heading home from a team run yesterday, he turned onto his block. Border Patrol had it blocked off. Agents threatened to break his window if he didn't move his car before he could act. They pulled him out of the car, knelt on his back. Even though he never resisted, they broke 6 ribs and caused internal bleeding. Now, lest you think Border Patrol is coming back and saying, oh, that was a mistake. No, that's not what they're saying. Their Border Patrol came back and said, yep, we're doing our job. And if you're going to cause problems, then this is going to happen to you too.
It is, again, we are in absence for incredible adjectives here, right? Shocking, stunning, contrary to what we do in America. And here, not only should this be a source of outrage as to this particular young man, but know as well that there are remedies here. They're not criminal in nature, although they could be, depending upon if this fellow has indeed engaged in violations of the Constitution in doing this. It certainly appears. But there's also the notion of, again, a prosecution for arrest under circumstances where you're using excessive force. And people have, in fact, gotten monetary damages against law enforcement when they engage in this kind of conduct. There are remedies out there. And again, the, as I said, the local state's attorney there in Illinois should also be looking at whether or not this conduct is fundamentally criminal in nature. Only the DA, only the state's attorney can prosecute that. But all those things should be on the table in addition to America, wherever you are, expressing absolute outrage, demanding that this not continue. Sarah Ellis. Sarah Ellis, again, is the name of the judge who deserves our commendation and our support. She is the one who's right now trying to keep a hold on this, stunningly saying, can we please not use tear gas when children are trick-or-treating tomorrow? What a stunning, stunning indictment of America that a federal judge has to say, let's let the kids get some candy and enjoy the evening without being gassed on the streets of America. What is going on?
If you're just joining us right now on Matt and Air on Air, you are talking to Jane and Greg. We are on the show right now, Matt and Air on Air, and we are talking with Jim Santel, who is the host of Amicus, a law review, which is on 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. every Saturday. And if you miss an episode live, you can always go to civicmedia.us/shows, find Amicus, and you can download about 2 months worth of shows, if not more, honestly, because you're once a week. So there's a lot of access. It's a great, great program, and I highly recommend you check it out because it's like a little law class every single week for you. But Jim, earlier this week, I was talking about on the show with Jane that the way we're speaking about this country is how we speak. We used to speak about other countries, quote, unquote, yes, lesser countries, when it came to violence in the street as done by the federal government. And it's seeming to become overwhelming in the fact that we are now in the halls of lesser administrations or countries or however you want to call it. But there's something to be said about this, about Sarah Ellis, Judge Sarah Ellis, let me rephrase that, is that we can see slow movements of pushback, whether it's from the judges. This is a big, to me, this is a big deal. The fact that there is at least a showing of accountability, trying to make them seem accountable, whereas a couple of weeks ago, it was just, sorry, that's it. We don't have to show our faces. We don't have to identify ourselves. If we beat you up, we beat you up. If we disappear you, too bad. If we send you somewhere else, not our problem. Now it seems like, all right, small cracks in the armor here, yes, by ways of judge and by the press, by not adhering to Pete Hegseth's new demands for covering the Pentagon. I mean, from your point of view as a lawyer, and you see a lot of this happening as far as the legality as of what they are doing, are you seeing more and more pushback coming from various judges? Or, I mean, is this the, do you see this as the beginning possibly?
I think it's the beginning. I think it's actually the continuation. We've seen this actually, I go back to March 15th when judges, a fellow named James Boasberg in District of Columbia said, you know what, if there are 238 people on those planes going to El Salvador, you bring them back here, you tell the pilot to turn around. And many, many other instances, Greg and Jane, where that has happened. Sarah Ellis, the most recent of all of these. And yes, indeed, your listeners and all of us should take more than just solace in the notion that she is one of the guardrails, as are these other federal judges, saying, no, this is not permissible. This is not legal. Don't do it. And so they are one of the guardrails. It's federal district court judges for the most part. It's also appeals court judges. Again, when you get into the United States Supreme Court, you hit this brick wall which appears to be granting the president permission to do whatever he wants to do. But there are judges out there saying no. The big question, which we've also talked about in the past on this wonderful broadcast, is what if the government, as it seems to be doing again in the streets of Chicago, witness this guy named Gregory Bovino, simply says, judge, no, I'm not doing that. What if Donald Trump says no, Supreme Court, or other judges? What do we do then? Then right, we truly are beyond a constitutional crisis. Right. Then we're beyond even an authoritarian government.
What authority is gonna step in and hold them to account? The one thing I will take a little solace from is some of the judges who are making these decisions are actually Trump appointees who are coming, yes, back and saying, yeah, nice try, you can't do that. But something I find very disturbing that I don't think we've talked about nearly enough, this is from NBC News, Some new ICE recruits are showing up to training without being vetted. Recruits have had criminal backgrounds, failed drug tests, couldn't meet physical or academic standards. There is such a rush to deport people and get his quota up because Donald Trump has a quota. Stephen Miller has a quota. And they're just filling this up with people that we don't even know where they come. They could be Proud Boys. They could be all January 6th defendants who attacked Capitol police officers. I don't understand why there is no oversight over that agency, Jim.
There should be. And frankly, to your last comment, Jane, wouldn't we assume that many of these people are among the 1,000 folks that the president pardoned early in his term on the first day? Proud Boys, Three Percenters, those folks, mostly because we don't see their faces. We don't know who they are. We have no names. And this latest reporting that you have just accurately recited confirms, again, a basic flaw in what has been a part of this administration, this term and past term as well. If you want to work for the Department of Justice, I will tell you, this is what I dealt with for 30 years. Appropriately, you submit your documents. And until you're completely vetted, your background is done, your academic background is determined, whether you've got any criminal history, what is your present financial status, what is your family status, all these things go into it. And I've been in situations where I wanted to bring on an assistant U.S. attorney, the FBI wants to bring in a special agent, they're ready to go until someone in Washington gives me or gives that supervisor the call and says, you are ready, you can now call in Calvin and bring him on as an agent of the federal government. Until that happens and that approval is given, that person has no authority. They cannot enter the building, much less be out there doing things. This, once again, is law enforcement turned on its head. And therefore, we get these kinds of things where there's no background check and then presumably also no training. We've seen those videos as well. We give them guns. We go out there. There's no training on how to make a lawful arrest so people do not have their ribs broken and do not end up in the hospital. There are ways of doing that. That's a part of training. It is all destroyed. And apparently the president is just fine with that. Stephen Miller is fine with that. And again, situation 2025, go back to your central point. Judges are saying, Mr. President, no, you cannot do this. Do better. And we should take, again, some solace in that, even though the incidents continue to happen around the nation.
Staff members at the ICE Training Academy in Georgia discovered one recruit had previously been charged with strong-armed robbery, battery from a domestic violence incident. They've also found as recently as this month, some recruits going through the six-week training course hadn't even submitted fingerprints yet for their background checks, and we're giving them guns and sending them out on the streets.
I had to submit my fingerprints to get a bartending license in this state, and they're not... Right. My goodness. Actually, what's weird, and I know it's going to sound odd, but there is a bit of sympathy I actually feel for trained, qualified ICE agents who, while I don't agree with what they're doing, those individuals come bumbling in, can't make their lives any easier either. I mean, you're trying to create a situation and calm it down maybe, and they come in with their guns blade. This is bad.
Yeah, or dropping guns. That's not good. Jim Santel, we're going to continue our conversation with him on the other side. The Tish James case. I have questions. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay with us.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, our one, our only Calzone on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text at 855 855- 952-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream. Good morning, live stream.
Hi.
On Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up after 10 o'clock, Hans Breitenmoser will be joining us. He is a farmer, dairy farmer, cattle producer here in Wisconsin. We're going to talk about President Trump essentially telling cattle farmers, if only you knew as much about cattle as I do. So we're going to talk to Hans Breitenmoser and see how he reacts to that. Right now, Jim Santel, our friend, colleague, host of Amicus, a law review on Saturdays across the network from 9 to 11, is our guest. In the time that we have left, Jim, I wanted to talk about this Tish James case. Of course, the Trump administration has brought charges against New York Attorney General Letitia James. She's being accused, and now my website just went down. I got to bring it back up again. She is accused of mortgage fraud, and from what I was able to read, and correct me if I'm wrong, they're saying that she lied on her mortgage application about whether or not she was going to rent out her house. That's the big crime, right?
That's it, that she made a false statement when she got this loan and affirmed that the house would be a second residence, would not rent it out. That's number one, even without what has developed recently. That's the huge crime here that's alleged in this indictment presented once again by this interim U.S. attorney. And we've got some developments now, Jane, as you've called to my attention and the attention of your listeners, that it turns out that there is a rider. There is an insurance rider. There's a bank loan rider, rather, on this that basically says that, indeed, you can use it for short-term rentals. This is one of those situations, Jane and Greg, where, you know what? You don't have to be a lawyer. You don't have to be a judge. And maybe even if you're an insurance lawyer, which is what the U.S. attorney does, practices there,
yeah,
maybe you should have noticed that indeed this is the kind of thing that will not only affect your capacity to bring the lawsuit in the first place, but to get a conviction. You know, if this goes to a trial and the judge and the defense introduces evidence, the judge may well look at this and say, you know what? There's nothing here to be decided by a jury. You could even do something called a directed verdict, directing the verdict based upon the fact that there's no way factually that a jury could find this person guilty, Letitia James, based upon the fact that there is no overt, not even close, any fraud here of the sort that's alleged. It's a stunning development once again. It's going to sink this lawsuit, as will other motions as well.
Well, and my whole thing is, this was a victimless crime. There was no one,
yes,
who lost money. There was no one that got ripped off by this. They're just claiming that she lied for the purpose of getting this loan on this form. So there are no victims involved here. Nobody that she ripped off, unlike Steve Bannon, who ripped off Trump supporters for his wall. I can think of a number of other cases of Trump supporters ripping off people where actual harm was incurred monetarily, and they all got pardoned. But they want to go after Tish James for this. This seems like, what is it called? Grasping for straws.
Yes, yeah. It's also called vindictive prosecution. And the reason why she gets prosecuted, she'll raise this motion as well, in addition to this issue about there being this rider on the bank loan itself. She'll also maintain that the only reason I'm here, as she said publicly, is that the president of the United States wanted me indicted. And we pulled up some information here, as you said. You know, the dollar amount that she benefited from is so de minimis, so small. No U.S. attorney's office across the nation would ever even bring this as a viable prosecution, given the low dollar amount to begin with, even if there was a misstatement, which there wasn't here.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So
right.
Many problems with this. And the reason we're here once again is because Donald Trump wanted to get back at her. This is his retribution, which he promised the American people,
yeah,
those who voted for him. This is what you get.
Yep.
This is the retribution. And it's also the abuse, number one, of our judicial system. This is being bandied about, obviously, inside our courts. And it brings into the courtroom somebody who should be focused exclusively on what law enforcement in New York. If you think this isn't diverting her, think again. And that's the other, of course, piece of what Donald Trump wants to do. It's the investigation. It is the prosecution itself, in his view, which is the punishment. It does have that impact. Again, it's an abuse of the system, abuse of justice.
And her name just now goes on the growing list of enemies. That's the thing.
Yes.
You know, and he said it out loud numerous times.
I saw a flag by my mother-in-law's house that said Trump 2024, the revenge tour, and that perfectly encapsulates what this is. Yes. Coming from a party, might I add, that 10, 15 years ago, they were railing against gay marriage, people who didn't like war, and frivolous lawsuits. It was frivolous lawsuits. They could not stop talking about that. And now this case, to me, that seems like it should get no attention from the federal government, is now the centerpiece and the ire of Donald Trump. Once again, putting in charge someone to prosecute the case who has no business and qualified. No experience.
Well, and I also think this is indicative of the kinds of charges that the government could bring against just regular citizens like you and me.
Yes.
Yeah. Right? Right.
Let's it'd be fascinating to see what the grand jury was told here. The other problem that she has very quickly is if she did not present this information to the grand jury, there's an obligation on a prosecutor to present what's called exculpatory information. Mm-hmm. If she didn't present this to the grand jury, she has an ethical problem also. Down the road when we get those grand jury transcripts and figure out what this grand jury did and did not hear at the time of this indictment. More problems to come in this case.
Join Jim Santel Saturday mornings 9 to 11, Amicus, the Law Review across the network. Thank you so very much, my friend. We'll see you next week. News coming up next. Stay with us. This is Matt and Air on Air, coming to you across the vast statewide, countrywide. You can pick us up around the globe on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning and welcome to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our home at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text or leave a voice note at 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up. Next half hour, after the 10:30 news, we're going to lighten it up with sports. Milwaukee Journal Sentinel sports guru J.R. Radcliffe will be here to talk all things sports, and we'll wrap up the show as we always do with This Shouldn't Be a Thing, Halloween themed this week. Today it is the Great Runaway Pumpkin Edition. Stay tuned for that. Right now, we are delighted to be joined by Hans Breitenmoser. He's a regular guest on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Delighted to have him join us. He's a dairy farmer and a beef producer in Lincoln County. Good morning, Hans. Thanks so much for making time for us.
Good morning, Jane. Of course. Good to see you.
Good to see you as well. Lots of things going on. We can start with beef. Let's start with talking about beef and our beef producers. I found it kind of interesting, Hans, that the president of the United States essentially said that beef producers just don't get it. If they only understood as well as he does the industry, then beef producers wouldn't be upset.
I love that little laugh he had when you said that.
Your reaction?
I think Greg got my reaction. Come on, really? You know, can you give us a little bit of credit out here for maybe having some grasp on what our reality is? The beef situation is as follows. And I mean, we get into the beef weeds here a little bit and may bore you with this, but here's what's happening in the beef world. The beef the beef cow herd is as small as it's been in the history of forever. It's smaller than it's been since like the 1950s. And so what that does is that creates some opportunities for those of us who produce beef. So I'm a dairy farmer. And of course, once a dairy cow, you know, loses her ability to continue producing milk efficiently and effectively, she becomes, ground beef typically. We also produce a lot of little black calves, Angus Holstein cross calves that go into the beef side of things. and leave the dairy world and go into the beef world to get raised up to become the steaks and the roasts and all the things that we love. And so because that beef cow herd is smaller than it's been in a long time, that has created a supply issue. And the demand hasn't gone away, even though prices are higher in the stores. And in the dairy world, that's been a good thing for us because the milk prices are terrible. And so if I can have a little extra income by a higher value cull cow or those little black terminal crosses that we create that we don't need for replacements, that definitely helps my bottom line. And it definitely helps rural economies. So for the president to say, well, we're going to solve all the consumers' problems by sending a bunch of money to Argentina just doesn't make any sense because it doesn't help those of us in production ag. And it's really not going to help the consumers either because, number one, the consumers' tax dollars get frittered away and sent south of the border for something that's really not going to improve their prices at the store anyways. If you truly want to improve consumers' lives and make their lives better while not hurting producers, we should be focused on antitrust legislation in this country and busting up the four great big companies Yes. that are multinational corporations that are raising your prices. And if you think for one second that introducing a bunch of Argentinian beef is going to help your price at Walmart, you're kidding yourself. Because guess what the Walmarts of the world understand? They understand what people are willing and able to pay for a product, mm-hmm. and they're not going to lower the prices. They're just going to be a fatter margin for the people in between. So my prices aren't going to improve
yep.
in terms of higher prices for my product. And I promise you, consumers, you will not pay less at the store with this. You're just going to pay extra taxes.
Well, and we're going to get to the whole hoof and mouth thing with Argentinian beef because that's a whole separate thing. But I think it's important that people realize, like you said, Hans, let's go back a little bit. One of the reasons, from my understanding, that herds are smaller goes back a number of years to when we had extreme drought in mm-hmm. some parts of the country, right? And it was very expensive for beef producers to keep feeding their cattle. It was cheaper for them to send them to slaughter. And that's mm-hmm. one of the reasons why our beef price or our beef herds shrunk was related to this drought from several years ago, right?
Yes. Yeah, no, that's absolutely correct. I mean, that's one part of it, but that's a big part of it. And to add on to that is the average beef, the average cow-calf guy is, sort of my age or older. So, you're talking 60 plus years old average, right? So there's a lot of people in that industry that have been in an industry for a long time and are looking at their situation and saying, wow, these beef cows are worth a lot of money. I don't have enough feed and I'm of a certain age. It's silly for me not to pull the trigger. So that beef cow goes off to slaughter, which adds beef to the market immediately. But guess what? That beef cow doesn't get bred with a calf
right.
that is going to then become that beef steer. So her productive life is over and the beef cow herd shrinks as a result. So there's demographic issues, there's weather issues. And I understand we're going to talk about this at some point too. There's the labor issue because guess what? It takes somebody to actually feed all those yep. animals and do all the things.
If you're just joining us on Matt and Air on Air, we are speaking with Hans Breitenmoser, who is a Lincoln County dairy farmer, a beef producer, a friend of Civic Media, and we are talking about the announcement last week. And really, if I'm not mistaken, too, it was really kind of off the cuff. I feel like his staff was behind the scenes going, what did he just say? Is that
they are I think they do that every day.
They're going to start buying Argentinian beef because apparently we are investing as a partner, a corporate partner in Argentinian. Wow. Good Lord. Whether it's $40 billion or giving our money to buy their beef. But you are a beef producer, and I imagine you talk to other people in the industry, and whether it's people in cattle throughout the country and the state. What are you hearing from them on this? I mean, because like I have to imagine, regardless of who they voted for, this was not something they expected. Like we've seen tariffs cause bailouts, we've seen farmers seem to vote against their interests, but this is one where he said we're going to start buying Argentinian beef, and I have to imagine y'all were like, What?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I think there is a lot of that. Wait, what?
Yeah.
That's the reaction. I mean, I think it takes a long time for people's voting reflexes to change, which is to say, you know, the quote red parts of our country are still pretty darn red. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting how many questionable or straight up poor decisions the administration can make, and how many, rather than converts to more progressive politics, but you know, it tends to create apologists for the administration. Mm-hmm. or you know, people willing to make excuses and say, well, you know, this is somehow part of some magic strategy that's
long-term plan.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because I feel like, you know, other administrations in the past didn't get away with that, right? Yeah. I mean, if anything happened, came out of the Biden administration or the Obama administration or even the Bush administration, was like, you know, people would jump on it immediately and say, what in the wide world of sports is going on? So there is a difference because of this, I'm going to say, cultish kind of situation here. But yeah, I mean, you know, and the other interesting thing is that, you know, one wonders how much of this has to do with some concern over consumer prices in this country and how much of it has to do with the fact that there's a political ally in Argentina. If he wasn't in bed with the Argentinian president, we wouldn't be having this conversation. You know what I'm saying? If that guy didn't, wasn't a huge, you know, Trump fan, then, you know, this deal wouldn't have happened to begin with. So it's frustrating because I just don't see a lot of congressional oversight here either. There's an opportunity for people in Congress to say, wait, hold on. This is a terrible idea. And I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. It's poor public policy.
Yeah, it's bad for our farmers who you know, our politicians love to raise up on a pedestal anytime they want to get elected.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's no end to the hero worship in my industry. And I mean, I'm proud to produce food. You mm-hmm. know, I really am. I sincerely am. But it becomes more frustrating when you have an administration who doesn't understand how that whole system works. And I'm the last guy that wants consumers to pay through the nose when they go and they want to buy a pound of hamburger or a steak. But that's my frustration here. I mean, if I could honestly sit here and say, well, okay, the good news is that Jane and Greg are going to get cheaper food at the store, then it would be a little bit easier for me to swallow this. But that's not what's going to happen. Right. I promise you, that simply won't happen. So what has been gained other than bailing out, a guy in Argentina who's struggling politically?
Well, and one of the reasons, Hans, that we're bailing out this guy in Argentina is because a member of the Trump administration has a really wealthy friend who bought up debt in Argentina, who really needs Argentina to recover so he gets his investment back. Let's go back a little bit to the four big, there's the four big producers. They're the ones who process the meat. As you said, there are only four of them in the country that control all of this. And one of the biggest ones is Brazilian owned. And yet we never, ever hear that talked about.
No, we don't. And it's so strange because I feel like, from a policy standpoint and how to improve the lot of rural America, this would be a fairly easy one to tackle. So you've got basically a monopoly in the meatpacking industry and they're multinational companies. And when you layer that monopoly on top of the retail grocery situation, sort of, and how that's monopolized, it just straight up doesn't do any good for producers and it doesn't do any good for consumers. And antitrust legislation, by God, is something that everybody, regardless of how you feel about, you know, guns or the minimum wage or anything else. I mean, I feel like that's something that all policymakers should be able to get behind because you see the impacts of it and the impacts are broad. But I think, you know, at the risk of going down another rabbit trail, you're also talking about money and politics when you start talking about antitrust legislation.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Honestly, Hans, I love having you on the show because you just say so many amazing things. And I forgot what I was going to ask you because we wouldn't have time anyway. So I'm just going to let Jane take it from here because my brain is falling apart because I read the news all the time.
I wanted to share this.
See, usually somebody asks me a very simple question and I ramble for, you know, a half an hour and I forgot the question that they asked to begin with.
So. Sir, would you like fries with that? That's all I was asking.
Yeah, exactly. I was going through the drive-thru and half an hour later.
I wanted to share this with you real quickly before we go to break. Carolyn Leavitt, who is the spokesperson for the White House, talking about America's beef producers. They're struggling because of the many horrible policies of the previous administration.
Of
Is that your lived experience that this is all because of Biden? I'm just checking.
No. Beef prices were going up during that four-year period as well. But again, it has to do with simple math, right? It has to do with if you, in order to produce a beef steer, that steer has to be born, you know, 14, 18, 20 months ago, depending on breed, et cetera, and that has to come from a cow. And if that cow doesn't exist, she can't have the calf that becomes the steer. That has nothing to do with who's in the White House.
That is so logical. That's making head explode. It's all across science. Washington. Ugh. They're just trying to accept the logic of that. We're going to continue our conversation with Hans Breitenmoser. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go away.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air, Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We're joined by Hans Breitenmoser, a dairy farmer and a beef producer in Lincoln County. And Hans, we had a Troy from Mount Horeb has been waiting very patiently on the phone. Troy, what did you want to say real quickly, please?
Hi, real quick. The Kansas City Star wrote an article about how tariffs were gutting farmers, and a farmer from El Dorado said that farmers aren't blaming Trump for the tariffs, and I said they should, and he said back to me, no, sir, farmers are doing better right now than the majority of Biden's 4 years. Don't open your mouth about something you know nothing about. Is that true?
Thank you, Troy. Great question. Great question.
Yeah. I'm gonna tend to disagree with your friend.
Yeah,
not your lived experience.
Not my lived experience. Milk prices are not great. I'm a consumer and producer of corn and beans, and so the lower prices that we're seeing for commodities like corn and soybeans are helpful to the dairy world because we feed those products. But you know, we're you know, a lot of us do both. And so it's a kind of a double-edged sword there. And the beef prices, again, are high, but they have nothing to do with this administration or the last administration. It's a simple
supply and demand, you know, right?
Yeah. It's supply and demand. And it has, again, to do with the demographics of the average age of the beef producers and the weather that we've had out west and in some of these places where they're, you know, the cow calf herds exist.
And you know, over the past few months, we've been hearing from various farmers, and some farmers say there's no resentment, no problems amongst their peers and their colleagues and whatnot. And then we talk to other farmers who say they're hopping mad. And then we got people who are mad at Trump, and then they get what they want. And then they're not mad at Trump anymore. And I feel like when you ask a person to speak on behalf of a whole group, farmers aren't a monolith. Everyone has different thoughts and feelings, right? And they're going to do and say what they want. And that's for them to do. So, yeah, I mean, but I can't imagine that. But the notion that it's better than Biden, it's like that. I need more proof than that. But one of the things we wanted to talk about, though, with you, Hans, is you went to D.C. last week to talk about sensible immigration reform. Mm-hmm. Because as you've spoken on Pat's show and on our show, that this mission on behalf of the government to rid ourselves of the immigrants in this country is really doing damage to the farming industry. And guess what? We talked about that for a while now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I was in D.C. last week with an organization called ABIC, which stands for American Business Immigration Coalition. And basically, ABIC is a bunch of folks who are business owners and represent different business interests, ag, hospitality, construction, you name it. The medical world as well, and our elder care type world as well. And so the reason why ABIC exists is because ABIC and its members understand that, again, it's kind of a simple math problem. We don't have enough young people compared to the number of old people that we have.
Yep.
Now, to put it in a dairy farmer's sort of lingo, our breeding program sucked 20 years ago, and therefore we didn't produce enough babies, and there's not enough 20-year-olds to fill the positions. Now, we can't unring that bell.
Right.
And this isn't a Democratic problem or a Republican problem. It's a simple math problem. Your breeding program isn't any good and you don't produce enough young people.
Yeah.
It at some point it's going to bite you in the rear end. So, and as our population in this country ages from a lower birth rate and from longer life expectancy, you've got more and more people entering a stage of their life where they're not producing any widgets, whether that's beef for the grocery store or whatever it is. And you also at the same time have a population who needs care from other people.
Yes.
Right. So that puts everybody in a bind. So we've seen that in the ag world for years and years and years, and everybody else is seeing as well. So ABIC's job and those of us who went along went there to tell our stories to legislators and to try and help them understand, that this is a math problem that we can't get over anytime too soon internally. And the good news is we've got people from all over the world who would like to come into this country and lots of them that are already in this country and would like the legal authorization to work here. They're not looking for citizenship. They're not looking for any handouts. They're really just wanting to be able to do their work. And again, in many cases, work that they've been doing for 10, 15, 20 years,
yeah.
And to be able to do that without, getting any aggravation from the heavy hand of ICE.
It almost seems like the individuals who want to come into this country want to do it in a legal, logical way so they can work and provide. And yet still, even when they do it the legal, logical way, they're still getting thrown out of this country and it's harming Absolutely. Our farmers.
Well, and as you said, too, there's this big push now under the Trump administration. We need more babies. We're under babied. Everybody should have more babies. Well, even if we start that assembly line now, as you said, that's going to take 20 years.
Exactly. No, and I'm not anti-babies. I've got 5 children of my own. But again, it's what do you do between now and then?
Right.
Who's going to take care of grandma between now and then? Who's going to milk the cows between now and then? Who's going to, build the buildings and do the, all of these things? I mean, I heard all sorts of interesting comments. The elder care industry, for example, is really getting hit hard because their average age is like 55. So some of these people are leaving that industry and turning right around and requiring the care that industry
that they just
provides.
Served. Hans Breitenmoser is a dairy farmer and beef producer in Lincoln County. Thank you so very much, Hans. We really, really appreciate your time.
You bet. My pleasure. Thank you.
Stay with us. News is next, and then we'll lighten it up with a little audio sorbet and all things sports with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's J.R. Radcliffe. Don't go away. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.